Venezuela has been muddling through a political crisis for months, some would say years even. We were stunned in January when an opposition leader took on President Nicolas Maduro, the handpicked successor of the deceased Hugo Chavez, and then last month there was an attempted coup. Dozens of countries backed it, and the Venezuelan military seemed to sign on. Here on The World, we covered the attempted coup every day and were glued to social media for updates. But the news struck one of our former producers, Ruxandra Guidi, even deeper.
Violent street battles that broke out in Venezuela today.
Thousands of people responded to the call by the opposition to...
This is the moment a military truck rammed into a group of protesters in Caracas.
I think it was about 5 a.m. My phone kept buzzing next to my bed, and it was a friend of mine who had just been sent a video of National Guard in Venezuela stopping traffic in all the major freeways, and I realized that there was a coup underway. And my heart just stopped because my father's still there. He still lives in Caracas. I was born in Caracas in 1976. By the time I was three, my parents divorced and I was raised by my mom. But I saw my dad on the weekends. And growing up, my dad was the, you know, the popular hippie who was always going to parties. And his friends at the time looked up to Fidel Castro in Cuba. Back in those years, in the 70s, you were either looking to move to the U.S. or you wanted to stay in Venezuela and had this, like, dream of socialism that Cuba had established for the rest of the region.
Compañeros y compañeras.
And I grew up hearing the speeches by Castro, like we might listen to Dr. King today. You know, like, we just would listen to that on the BBC in Spanish, you know, for leisure, for entertainment. So this was something that I didn't question in those years. Then in 1990, my mom got a fellowship offer in the States. I was 14 years old at the time, and we ended up staying in the U.S. You know, I kept in touch with my dad, so we wrote each other these long handwritten letters. But after about 5 years in the States, we started talking to each other less and less. By 98, I was finishing college, and there were elections in Venezuela, and Hugo Chavez won.
Venezuela tiene su hora, y es que llegó la hora del pueblo.
My dad transferred all his adoration for Fidel Castro to Hugo Chavez, and he had faith that he would fix the country, he would do away with inequality. But, you know, I was wary of how Chavez came from the military and that he seemed to want to identify his enemies wherever he went. So I started to become disillusioned pretty quickly. Meanwhile, my father was going in the opposite direction, and he was consumed by Chavez. And I found it difficult for him to relate in any way to what my life was like here in the U.S. He would call it the empire. And this is what Chavez himself would use to refer to the United States. And before long, we had very little to talk about. We found ourselves arguing about everything. And around those years, around the mid-2000s, we became estranged, and we only really spoke around our birthdays or holidays. 5 years ago, I moved to Quito, Ecuador, because I wanted to see how Hugo Chavez's revolution and its influence were playing out in the rest of South America. And while I was living in Ecuador with a young kid, my father's only grandkid, he reached out to me one day and he asked to meet her. And I remember one of the first things we did after we picked him up at the airport is we went to the supermarket. And my father started to weep when we walked through the supermarket because he hadn't seen that much food in a couple of years. It was very intense. You know, he'd lost a lot of weight. He was considerably older. And he was enamored with my daughter. So we just simply got back into our relationship where we'd left off. You know, looking back on it, I don't really know how or why things got so bad between my dad and me. There was a politics, of course, but there were a lot of other issues. Like, I felt abandoned by him. I was upset that he didn't do more to support me and my mom financially and emotionally. And there was this huge guilt that I felt, you know, about having left Venezuela, about having become Americanized, almost like betraying him and his principles. It's as if the changes, the radical changes that went on in Venezuelan society were so closely linked in time to the changes that went on in my life, my own coming of age, my shifting relationship with my dad. It's hard for me to blame, of course, Chavez or the revolution for that, but it's definitely all tied together in my mind, in my consciousness. So these days I don't really argue at all with my father anymore. I see my role more as the person that wants to hear him out. He spends most of his days in his room listening to the state TV channel and RT, that's Russia Today, in Spanish, and they're just broadcasting Maduro speeches, Fidel Castro speeches, spreading the message that the revolution is still alive, that the reason why there's food shortages is because of the economic war that the U.S. is waging against Venezuela. And these are often lies fabricated by the regime, but as it turns out, on the day of the attempted coup, my dad explained to me how he knew this was coming. They'd been saying so on the state TV channel, and he's confident that this will happen again. And, you know, I have to say, I found myself agreeing with him. I think he's right. I think this is going to happen again. And I just hope that he has the strength to live through this. And I hope I'll see him again.
Ruxandra Guidi reflecting on politics and family. She told her story to the world's Sarah Birnbaum and Ian Koss. The music you heard there was by an ensemble of Latin American musicians featuring Venezuelan pianist Gabriela Montero.